You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello, welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're looking ahead to Tuesday's action on this edition. You'll hear us all live on Racing Radio from 1:40pm with Sam Norris, Craig Forsyth and John O'Connell in the studio. Air Chepstow and Nottingham throughout the afternoon, Hexham, Huntingdon and Sligo in the evening. So racing in both codes to look forward to. My name is Mark Walton, joining me in the studio to look ahead to the action is Mr. Gareth Topham. How are you, Gareth?
I'm good, Mark. Yourself?
Yes, very well indeed. We're going to look at the Racing Post Monday jury, which looks back at some of the weekend stuff and what we've seen over the past week or so at York as well. Also looks ahead to some of the classics, the big two classics, the Oaks and the Derby coming up. And then we're going to get Gareth's thoughts on some of the action coming up on Tuesday as well. You've been away, haven't you, Gareth? You're back into the swing of things yet?
Yeah, we've been away to Alaska for a couple of weeks.
Very
we got
nice.
Back the beginning of last week. So, yeah, back in the swing of things now. Plenty of race meetings, plenty of shifts in here to pay for it.
Good. Back into the swing of calling as well. I mean, were you already commenting on the flat before you went away, or was it a case of changing coach when you came back?
I have for the last sort of 3 or 4 years done the Lincoln meeting at Doncaster.
Yes.
I didn't do it this year. And I have found that when you're away for 2 or 3 weeks, getting back into it, it can just take a little while, particularly with the flat. And even this weekend just gone, Doncaster on Saturday night, there were one or two big fields. And yeah, you just get the feeling now and again that the horses are actually ahead of you. And it's never a good feeling to have. Anyway, I think it sounded all right in the end. I think we got away with it.
You didn't get raisin.
No, market raisin yesterday was a little bit more steady. So, and I'm at Kelso next Sunday, so that's fine. So that'll be nice and steady. So yeah, but it is amazing how it can just sort of get away from you, the knack of keeping up with the horses, keeping it rhythmical, keeping it easy on the ear, I suppose. But it'll come back. There's plenty of racing this summer.
So there you go.
And I'm doing plenty of big fields again. Yeah. So I usually get a lot of the big field races, sort of Eagle Cup meeting and Redcar 2-year-old trophy day races like that. So yeah.
So just like the horses, you'll come on for the run in some respects.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a phrase that applies to more than just the equine performers.
Good. We'll look forward to hearing you calling them home anyway as you go forward. Let's get your thoughts on the Monday jury, though, because there are some interesting questions in there this week, particularly the last one. I can't wait for your answers on that. But what lessons did we learn from this year's Lockinge, won by Rhododendron?
Well, we learned, obviously, that she's... We sort of knew it anyway, didn't we? That she's a very, very good filly. And she battled really, really hard, didn't she, to get the better of Lightning Spear, who's, I think, a really smart performer. He was sent off at a much, much bigger price than Rhododendron, but each year he runs in these big mile races. He often performs with plenty of credit, and the two of them in the end came a little way ahead in what was a big field, very wide open looking Lockinge. I just really like the way that she battled on all the way throughout that final furlong. Ryan Moore was seen at his very strongest, and she's going to be an exciting horse at this sort of trip throughout the course of the remainder of the summer, you'd imagine. Lightning Spear is probably likely to meet her again in future races, and it'll be interesting to see with them. I mentioned the prices a few moments ago, what the price discrepancy will be between the two if they did meet again in future. I'm sure they will. A few other things that we learned from the race. Adabe possibly not quite as good as they thought he was. He was found out without any real great excuses. He was off the bridle from a long way from home. Lamarto definitely isn't a miler.
Yep.
And Beat the Bank, he was a horse back last season who I thought would perhaps go all the way to Group 1 level, and each time he's tried it he's just come up a little bit short as well. So it was an interesting race. It was a big field, very big field for a Lockinge, but it produced a brilliant finish, and it gives us plenty to look forward to with the mile races which are coming up throughout the remainder of the summer.
Do you think Rhododendron's got better from 3 to 4? Because obviously, as a three-year-old, she was kept mainly, almost exclusively, I think, to racing against her own sex, and kept bumping into one in the real big races. This time she's come out and beaten the boys in a group one. Do you think maybe she's going to be better at four?
Yeah, possibly. She raced it slightly longer, didn't she, back at last season as well. She raced over sort of 10 furlongs, 9 furlongs. Of course, she ran second in the Oaks behind Enable as well, that race being over a mile and a half. So maybe they've now just found the key to her. She's got another year behind her. She'd have strengthened up. I think she's a really, really exciting filly to be going to war with throughout the course of this summer. And the fact that she's come out and she's beaten the boys, she's obviously very, very good.
Mm. Can you see Crystal Ocean being competitive in races like the King George and the Ark?
Yeah, competitive. Whether he's good enough to win them, he was impressive on Saturday, wasn't he? It was that turn of foot that he showed, and he just drew away from his rivals. He won by, what was it, 6 lengths or something like that in the end. But again, that was only a Group 3 contest, and in terms of Group 3, it probably wasn't the strongest Group 3 that we've ever seen. He was sent off at 2-5. We had a 20-1 and a 40-1 runner in a 5-runner field, so he only really had a couple of credible rivals. And yes, he's beaten them hollow, but you just get the impression that when the likes... I know that Enable's out until, what is it, the autumn now, and Cracksman hasn't yet made his seasonal reappearance. You just get the impression that in terms of middle distances, there's going to be one or two horses that really are setting the standard. And Crystal Ocean, I think, even after Saturday's win, has to go another level to get anywhere near them, really. But he's a very, very good horse. I think he obviously gets a little bit further as well. I think the cup races that Enable and Cracksman and horses of that calibre won't be turning up in could well be his for the taking, and I'm sure we'll see him in plenty of Group 2s and 1s as the season goes on, and he'll be a worthy each-way player in each of them.
Just want to mention one thing in there, Gareth. You might have missed it whilst you were away. Cracksman has made his reappearance this season.
Oh, apologies.
Over in France, he was pretty good as well.
Okay.
Suggesting that it's going to be another big year for him, because he finished last season really well, didn't he? He made his reappearance at Longchamp and won by 4 lengths.
Of course he did. Yeah, I did see that. I saw a replay of it.
Yes.
Yeah, I did see that. And that's the thing, Crystal Ocean, he's just got to improve that bit further. He was impressive, wasn't he, on Saturday? But, I don't want to be too rude in saying he didn't beat much, but in terms of what he's likely to come up against in the future, it's going to be a completely different ballgame for him.
Yeah, winning a Group 3 by 6 lengths. Mm. Is much easier than winning a Group 1.
Yeah.
So, we've seen that with the Dave. He won a Group 2 by several lengths. And
that's
then
the thing. It's amazing the step up between... We saw it with a Dave between handicap company and group company. It's an incredible step up. I know it's something that one of our fellow pundits in the studio here, Andrew Mount, he always says that the step between the two levels is quite something. And, you know, if you are able to make the grade, then all well and good. But it's a very, very difficult thing to do. Crystal Ocean is, of course, proven in group company.
Yes.
But again, between group three and group one, and I'm sure that Connections are going to have their eyes on these sorts of top prizes, it's still a considerable step up.
Do you think we saw the this year's champion sprinter and stayer at the Dante meeting?
I was really impressed with Harry Angel.
Yeah.
I must admit. He was a horse that I did like last year. I was really impressed with his win in the July Cup. It was that July Cup where sort of everything turned up in against him. You know, your Lamartos, your Caravaggios, and he beat them, and he beat them well. And I just wondered whether he would have had conditions entirely to his liking at York back last week. But he seemed to just sweep aside his rivals. He won very impressively. There was never really a moment's doubt, and I can't wait to see what he's going to be doing as the season rolls on. But at the moment, I'd have him. I think he was labelled in commentary by Mike Catamol last week as being the best sprinter in the world. Well, that's probably quite a statement, but if he isn't, he wouldn't be far off it. So he's going, he sets the standard for the others to aim at, doesn't he, with what he did last week.
And he's not always been his best on reappearance in the past, has he? So that's a big step forward, isn't it? So.
Yeah, it is. Again, a horse with another year behind him, and he's clearly strengthened up that bit more. He's probably improved again over the winter. I mean, he was a ready good three-year-old, wasn't he?
He was.
He's going to be some force for the others to live up with.
And Stradivarius, I was impressed with him.
Yeah.
I think the cup races and those staying races are at his mercy already, really, I think, going forward.
It looks to be, again, possibly not the strongest division. Big Orange, of course, is now out for for the foreseeable. There are good horses coming across from Ireland once again, but at the moment, he looks to be a horse really, really going forward. And what was so impressive last week, he seemed to have that race won 2 or 3 furlongs out. Frankie kept looking behind. He brought him right across to the stand side. He didn't touch him with a whip. It was all hands and heels, and the horse is just drawn away for a very comfortable win. So in what possibly isn't the strongest division, particularly with one or two of the big names out, like Big Orange, for example. Of course, Stradivarius has got the beating of Big Orange. They've met before.
Yes. But
yeah, I think with the likes of Big Orange out and one or two other horses which are going to be at the top of their game in that sphere, not yet reappearing, I think I'm right in saying that, he does again look to be the one that they've all got to get by.
With Epsom trial season over, who'd you like for the Oaks?
I've not paid a great deal of attention to the Oaks as yet, but the one filly that I have seen out and about was La-Ti-Da, who is favourite at the moment for John Gosden, Lord Lloyd Webber. She just looks really, really good, doesn't she? She scored on that that Newbury debut. Obviously, she hasn't made her debut until the age of three, but she bolted up in Newbury's debut run and then went on to Newmarket at the Pretty Polly Stakes, which very often is a race which is seen as a bit of a stepping stone to the Oaks. And she won that equally as impressive against much stronger company. And again, that was a listed race, and now we're talking about her progressing up to Group 1 company. But she seems to be ticking all the boxes. She still looked a little bit raw, I thought, at Newmarket as well. She looked a little bit green. There was a little bit of wandering in the closing stages. There's obviously further improvement to come from her. And at the moment, I would say she's the one to beat. And let's face it, connections know the time of day.
Yes. Yes, they do. 7-4 as well now, La-Ti-Da. So everyone has been impressed, I think, by what we've seen from her so far. With regards to the derby, the next question, is Saxon Warrior unopposable? Or are you not that convinced?
He looks, again, the solid one, doesn't he? Comes into this race having... I was really impressed with Roaring Lion last week, by the way. But Saxon Warrior has beaten him already a couple of times. And Saxon Warrior has come out and he's won the top race, hasn't he, coming into this in the shape of the 2,000 guineas. So I think he's the rightful favourite. Again, possibly not the strongest set of sort of middle distance three-year-old colts that we'll ever see. You know, one or two of them have been beating one another. Young Rascal came out. He was quite impressive at Chester. Hazapur was possibly a surprising winner over at Leopardstown, but a good winner nonetheless. And then already you're looking at much, much bigger priced runners. The two that fought out the Racing Post Trophy, again, it's another race that is usually seen as a good stepping stone to the following year's Derby. They were Saxon Warrior and Roaring Lion. They've both come out and they've both been very impressive in what they've done this season. The only problem for Roaring Lion, we don't know whether he's actually going to turn up in this because he's got other options. I think the French Derby possibly was mentioned. I think John Gosden basically knows where he stands with Saxon Warrior. So what's the point of coming here if he can't beat him? So yeah, Saxon Warrior, he is definitely the very solid one. Whether I'd want to be steaming in at 8-11, probably get shorter, won't he, if Roaring Lion goes elsewhere.
Yeah.
But he was impressive in his 2,000 guineas win. I really like the way he battled back to win that Racing Post Trophy last year. For me, he ticks every box. And again, Ballydoyle know what it takes to win a derby. So, yeah, Saxon Warrior, he is the one to beat.
Yeah, they're doing. They've called him a monster already.
Yeah, but they call a lot of their horses
monsters.
They do.
And they're saying that the Triple Crown...
The best
crown,
we've ever had.
Yeah, yeah. The Triple Crown's very much on the agenda for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't say that about... You know, the horses that they say that about, the Camelots and such,
yeah,
they usually are pretty
And good. That's the thing. If, obviously, he's going up in trip, and it doesn't seem that hard a thing to do these days for a top-class three-year-old to go from a mile to a mile and a half. Most of them sort of... They get it. But for them to be even thinking about the St. Ledger, he must be showing them something at home which suggests, yeah, you know, he's going... I mean, he's obviously well-bred for this type of distance and, you know, a little further as well. But they obviously think, you know, a mile and six is going to be well up his street. But he's obviously not short of pace either.
Mm.
So, again, as I said, he just ticks every box, doesn't he? He's got the class, he's got the pace, he's got the stamina. And it'll be great to have a Triple Crown winner. Of course, the same team were deprived of such in... quite unusual and unfortunate circumstances a few years ago with the aforementioned Camelot. I think they got the race, didn't they, afterwards? But even so, it was, you know, it'd be nice to see them do it outright, do it properly, and Saxon Warrior could well be a real big candidate for that.
8-11 for the Derby, Saxon Warrior, very strong at the top of the market. And we move on to the final question. If Harry and Meghan got a horse, who should they choose as their trainer and jockey? I'm pretty sure they've been discussing this on the honeymoon, you know?
It's
right at the forefront of their mind, I imagine.
Yeah, obviously.
Did you watch the royal wedding?
I saw bits of it.
Yeah.
The only problem with the royal wedding, obviously, it's on all day, isn't it? And it's great. It's good. You know, it's lovely seeing all the different colours, all the different outfits, everybody having a good time. I thought Victoria Beckham could have smiled a bit more. But I find that the commentators, a lot of the time, they're talking about anything and nothing, really, aren't they? Just to fill time and... You know, it's all covered in just, what, half an hour, you know, the big moments. So.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was good. I had to go to Doncaster, so I was looking at my colours for that more. But, yeah, it was all right what I saw of it.
From what I heard, you were invited, but you had to, you know, you had to go to Doncaster.
I'm a busy guy, yeah. You know. so I got this holiday to pay for, so, you know, I couldn't mess about. Who would they have for their... I think Aidan O'Brien. I can go Ireland, can't I?
Yeah?
Yeah. I think Aidan O'Brien... I still think Frankie's excellent. Everybody says Ryan Moore, but I think Frankie on the big day. He proved it last week on Stradivarius. I know he had the horse beneath him, but that man knows what he's got beneath him. And yeah, I go a little bit, yeah, to the Aidan O'Brien, Frankie de Torre. He doesn't ride many for Ballydore, though, does he, Frankie?
He wouldn't. No.
Ryan Moore, he's a bit obvious, though, isn't he, Ryan Moore?
Mm.
And he's in quite a bubbly couple. Ryan Moore's not very bubbly, is he? You know, he's a class jockey, but...
Yeah, he's a man of few words.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Megan would, she seems a bit more fun than Ryan Moore. I think she prefers sort of giving instructions to Frankie over Ryan. I don't know, I think I'm overthinking this myself.
Maybe you are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Who do I think? Yeah, Aidan O'Brien. Let's get Frankie and Aidan together and let's see what happens.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so... It's not really something I've ever thought about.
No,
and as soon as you stop recording, I'll never think about it again. But yeah, good luck to them if they get a horse.
Yeah, if you are listening, Harry and Meghan, then that's Gareth's advice for you if you're getting a horse. I'm sure they tune into the racing podcast every day.
I'm sure they do.
So yes.
Got to listen to something on their honeymoon. It'd be a long flight.
Let's leave that there then before we get sent to the tower. Racing on Tuesday. You've gone for a first and last race double at Hexham. So
yeah,
we're in the national hunt sphere. The 6 o'clock is the first race you picked out there. 2.5 mile novices hurdle. What made you pick this race?
Well, it's a fairly average day's racing across the board, and I know the Hexham horses, the horses that run sort of around Hexham and the Northern Circuit, a little bit better. So for punting purposes, probably side with the meeting at Hexham. There's a horse in the opening race there, the 6 o'clock, called Slade Storm. Now, I actually know the owner of this horse, and he does get a real nice type, this owner. He owned the fabulous Galton a few years ago that went on till about 13 or 14 in his career. And he was a really good staying chaser, ran in a lot of the big races up at Kelso and places like that. And again, he feels that he's got another real nice stamp of a chaser in Slade Storm, who he ran at Kelso when I was away, actually. It was back on the 9th of May. And he got in touch with me a week or two back, and he thought this horse, it ran in a bumper. You'll have no problem jumping over hurdles. He's really sizable, but he thought he was a little bit unlucky. He got chopped up at the bend turning out of the back straight, and he actually ran on again at the finish. He finished fifth behind a horse of John Quinn's called Akarita Lights. John Quinn, of course, very much informed stable at the moment. And he wasn't beaten too far either. That race was over 2 miles. It was in pretty quick ground. I just think that this track is going to suit this Slade Storm, and also a step up to 2.5 miles and jumping a hurdle. I think he's got an awful lot in favour. He's trained by Alistair Willans. There's one or two sort of sexier stables, if you like, in the lineup up against him here. Kick on Dot, he's trained by Ruth Jefferson, comes into the race off the back of a recent win. Lucinda Russell's got a lightly raced horse called Times Awaiting. There's just one or two that might go off a little bit shorter in the betting market, which will make the price quite attractive. I think Slade Storm is a knocking each way bet on his fourth race course appearance. He's already got some fair northern form in the bag, and with that Kelso run last time, and he's running 2 point-to-points as well, so he's clearly got capability of jumping. He stays well. I think he's got plenty in favour. The owner really likes him, so Slade Storm in the opening race.
Okay. Slade Storm then for Gareth in that 6 o'clock, and then the final race on the card is the 9 o'clock. That's where Gareth's other selection comes up. Handicap hurdle this time over just over 2 miles, pretty much the 2-mile trip. 11 runners for this one. Which do you like?
Yeah, I wonder if Lord John Budden would agree with this one, because I know he's a big fan of the Morris Barnes stable. I just think they're in a bit of form at the moment. I actually tipped one of theirs for a television preview down at Market Raisin yesterday at a big price. No such number. He ran really well. He was second. They have a sheen here. I think that's how we say it. Dale Irving will be taking the ride. And this horse, I think he can be forgiven a recent run when he was returning from an absence. That was here at Hexham when eighth back on the 5th of May. But it was a much more competitive looking heat than this. It was class 3 in status, a 0-1-2-5. And he just found it a little bit hot. I think back down into this class 5 grade. It's not the greatest class 5 ever. It's a 0-100 race. There are not many coming into it in form. If you can forgive him that running better company last time out, he'd run two very decent races prior to that, just prior before he had a break. Maybe needed that run as well. That would have blown away the cobwebs. I think he is definitely the one they have to beat. He's better than what he's shown last time out, and yeah, he'll be match fit now. So yeah, a sheen in the final race for Morris Barnes, who I think is just about to have a pretty decent spell.
Yeah, last 2 weeks for the yard, they've had 13 runners, 3 winners and 2 seconds, which is a 23% win strike rate. And that's £25 to a £1 stake as well.
Yeah, not bad, is it?
You're getting decent prices, aren't you, for a lot of them. So,
And it was the same back last year. That horse that I tipped yesterday, he strung together 4 wins in a row around this time of year last year. So clearly the horses that they're running, you know, they're doing well. This is the time of year. They like a bit of sun on their back, and they obviously like quick ground, and Sheen falls right into that category. So, yeah, he'd be quite a confident pick in that last race down in grade.
Okay, good stuff. Good to see you again, Gareth. Good luck and enjoy it on Tuesday.
Will do, thank you.
There you go, the thoughts of Gareth Topham on Tuesday's racing. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:40 PM. For the team in the studio, Sam Norris, Craig Forsyth and John O'Connell. We've got an afternoon of flat racing, Air Chepstow and Nottingham, evening of summer jumping from Hexham and Huntingdon, also Irish racing as well from Sligo, so plenty to get stuck into. Do join the guys for that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast, and enjoy Tuesday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.